Hello, this is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL. Catholic Baltimore is a weekly radio program hosted by the Archdiocese of Baltimore, airing each Sunday following the broadcast of the Radio Mass of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic radio partners for sharing with us some of the contents in this program and for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to the Archdiocese of Baltimore every Sunday.
I'm Bob Krebs, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. As a young girl growing up in Charm City, May Gintling knew that God was calling her to serve the poor. This calling resulted in her serving as a Little Sister of the Poor for 20 years. Later, as a laywoman, she established the Joseph House to aid the poor and homeless in Baltimore and on Maryland's Eastern Shore. Additionally, at the urging of Mother Teresa, under the religious name of Sister Mary Elizabeth Gintling, she founded a community of Catholic nuns called the Little Sisters of Jesus and Mary. Tony Wall is a retired Salisbury University professor and author of the new book, Sister Mary Elizabeth Gintling, A Life for God. Tony, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bob.
In case our listeners might not be familiar with Sister Mary Elizabeth Gintling, just tell us about her life and her work, if you would, please.
Sister Mary Elizabeth, she is like these child prodigies that we see on television and YouTube. She knew when she was 3 years old, growing up in Baltimore, that she wanted to be a nun. And I always thought that was so remarkable. And she never wavered from that desire. She wanted to be a nun, and she wanted to help many of the poor people she saw in her neighborhood and around other parts of Baltimore. So she spent 21 years as a Little Sister of the Poor after working in a public health as a public health nurse in Baltimore hospitals. But after about 15 years with the Little Sisters of the Poor, she said that she began to feel that God was calling her to work not in the nursing homes that were run by the Little Sisters of the Poor, but literally on the streets in the midst of the poor people who she was always trying to help. It took her 5 years of kind of doubting and wondering if this was the right thing to do, and a lot of conflict with her superiors before she walked out of the convent at age 50. Once again, no longer a nun, she is now back again to being May Gintling. Mary Elizabeth was known as May by her family, and she began there what became the Joseph House Ministries in a poor section of Baltimore, where in a few short years she had attracted the aid of hundreds of volunteers, donors, to help offer financial assistance, food necessities, tutoring, job placement. They also opened a Montessori school. They had a gift shop. It was quite an operation. So in 1972, I think she had been in Baltimore for maybe 8 years by this point, she said that she was burnt out. So she went to New York to meet with Mother Teresa, and she wanted Mother Teresa to take over the Joseph House ministry, just to May Gintling would still run it, but she would have someone to report to and someone to watch over the operation administratively. It had just gotten too much for her. But Mother Teresa turned her down and told her what she should do, in addition to running this ministry, was to found an order of nuns to help her with the burdens. Sister Mary Elizabeth always wanted to be a nun. And so by 1974, she had founded the Little Sisters of Jesus and Mary. And as a result of that, there was a crisis in the ministry in Baltimore, in Joseph House. A lot of the people were, most of them, in fact, were lay volunteers. They were passionate about the work they did, but they also had some serious problems with the church. And This is back, of course, in the late 60s, early 70s. We know what that time was like. And so she lost a large number of the volunteers. She couldn't run the ministry anymore. She just found that it was too difficult. So she eventually relocated to Salisbury, which is another wonderful story. She and Sister Patricia used to feed the poor and help the poor out of the back of their station wagon for a while. But then they opened the crisis center. They opened a village of residences for single mothers who are trying to improve their lives, and a workshop that provides that same kind of support for men. She died in 2004, and she was surrounded by the people who adored her, and they continue the work, and they serve that ministry that she began to this day. Mm-hmm. Still a thriving, lively operation.
What about Sister Mary Elizabeth Gintling did you find the most inspiring?
For me, it was a combination of two character traits that were united in her, and you usually don't find them together, I don't think. I mean, I haven't found them. One was her utter humility and her human warmth, her openness. That combined with this incredible charismatic ability to lead all of us like some heavenly coach or CEO to do more and better. So she's this dynamo, this dynamic person who is also this sweet, open, humble human being.
What do you want your readers to take away from the book?
Well, I certainly hope they're inspired by Sister Mary Elizabeth's life and that they feel moved by her example to do whatever they're called to do for the poor and the dispossessed. I also hope they come away from the book wishing that they had had the pleasure of knowing her personally. Mm-hmm. She was truly a lovely, funny, life-loving, saintly, highly intelligent woman.
So you mentioned that the ministries that Sister Mary Elizabeth Gintling established in Salisbury are still continuing today. Talk a little bit about that, if you would, please.
Yeah, I've actually mentioned most of them, but I'd like to give a little more detail about, especially the crisis center. There are really three major parts to this. One is the crisis center, one is the workshop, and the third is that the Village of Hope. So the crisis center is the core of the operation down here. That is the hub, and it's got a cash assistance program, and we help people with evictions, with utility cutoffs, with health care bills, lots of other needs that they have. There's a dining room there that serves hot lunch. It's available to anyone. And a dozen churches in the Salisbury area take turns preparing and serving the meals. We have a food pantry that distributes supplemental bags of groceries to families and individuals in need, and they line up every day and come over here, and it is quite an operation. So I think at one point we were giving out 500 to 600 bags of groceries a day, so it's pretty big. Yeah. And then there's a hospitality room for the homeless, and that's kind of a day shelter for homeless men and women. They can come in, they can get a meal, they can get clothing there, they can take a shower, they can watch TV, they can get their clothes laundered, they can feel like loved human beings for a good part of their day. That's a tremendous part of that program. And then there's the workshop. The workshop is not an emergency shelter, it's long-term, and that's a program for men who are homeless or not working or not working enough. And this provides them with a supportive place to live, and they try to help them with job skills. And many of them are suffering from addiction, so they take them to 12-step programs and work with them to become independent citizens in the community. Yeah. That's what Sister Mary Elizabeth always wanted to help people do. And then the village shelter and life training skills for the homeless women with their children. And that was established by Sister Mary Elizabeth in 1991, and the nuns ran it for 10 years, and then it was incorporated separately.
Well, Tony Wall, author of Sister Mary Elizabeth Gintling, A Life for God, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
Tony Wall's book, Sister Mary Elizabeth Gintling, A Life for God, can be purchased online at thejosephhouse.org. For Catholic Baltimore, I'm Bob Krebs.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. Wednesday, April 27th, was the one-year anniversary of the unrest that followed in the wake of the death of Freddie Gray Jr., a 25-year-old resident of West Baltimore who died of injuries sustained while in police custody. Gray's death was the catalyst for a period of reflection on the divisions that exist in Baltimore between races and economic backgrounds and the ways in which such divisions impact individuals' social and economic mobility as well as their station in the justice system. The Archdiocese of Baltimore has been an active participant in the ongoing conversation. Last Monday, the Archdiocese hosted an interfaith prayer service for peace and unity at the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary in downtown Baltimore, which was attended by people of a diverse range of faiths, including Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. The Archdiocese has also worked actively to break down the divisions with initiatives such as a new Safe Streets location in Sandtown, Winchester, the neighborhood where Freddie Gray was arrested. Housed in St. Peter Claver Parish and sponsored by Catholic Charities, Operation Safe Streets Sandtown employs former offenders who have established street credit in their communities. In the words of one employee, they jump between the guns and mediate conflicts before they escalate to violence. The Archdiocese has also established an automotive tech training center at nearby St. Edward Parish with the goal of helping residents obtain gainful employment. Several parishes in the area have expanded or opened food pantries. The Catholic Review has covered these efforts and will continue to stay abreast of new developments. Remember to visit us at catholicreview.org and sign up for our e-newsletter by texting CR Media to 84576. From the newsroom of the Catholic Review, this is Eric Zygmunt.
Do you want to know more about what's going on in the church and the world than you can get from your daily newspaper or local TV? Read the only publication in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the church full-time. The Catholic Review. Pick up the print magazine monthly at your parish or have the Catholic Review delivered to your home every month. You can get fresh news every day online at catholicreview.org. Subscribe to the Catholic Review e-newsletter for twice a week updates. Just text CR Media to 84576. Find our app on Apple and Android and follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Wherever your faith takes you, Catholic Review Media is ready to inspire, teach, inform, and engage. Read it today, in print and online, at catholicreview.org. That's catholicreview.org.
You are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL.
I'm Bob Krebs, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. In the late 1950s, Stanley Rother, a farm boy from Oklahoma, flunked out of the seminary. Determined to pursue his calling to the priesthood, he persuaded his bishop to give him another chance. So in 1959, he packed his bag and headed to Mount St. Mary's Seminary in Emmitsburg, Maryland. Recently, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City opened the cause for canonization for Father Stanley Rother, who was martyred in Guatemala in 1981. Maria Ruiz Scapirlanda is the author of the new book, The Shepherd Who Didn't Run, Father Stanley Rother, martyr from Oklahoma. Maria, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. This is quite a treat.
So tell us about the early life of Father Stanley in Oklahoma.
His family were one of the original families that came down from Minnesota and became farmers in that whole region of Oklahoma. And to this day, his brother Tom still runs a farm out there in the same farmhouse that Father Stanley and his family lived when he was growing up. The school there is Holy Trinity Catholic School and the church, and it is still there. I was just there on Monday with the teachers and the walking the same hallways that Father Stanley walked when he was young.
Now, he attended Mount St. Mary's University and Seminary in Emmitsburg. What brought him to the seminary? Talk a little bit, if you would, please, about his calling to the priesthood.
Everything that I read about him and all the interviews that I've been able to do, what was interesting is how soundly he knew that he was called to be a priest. And he left for actually San Antonio, Assumption Seminary first, right out of high school. Unfortunately, he did not do very well at the seminary in San Antonio. In fact, he failed his first year of theology, and he was asked to leave the seminary. And I love that story because it shows how honest and genuine and simple and real he was. He's just a guy like the rest of us. And sometimes we stumble on things that we think we're supposed to do and don't understand why it's not coming easier. Mm-hmm. He was struggling with Latin. And at the time, all the classes were in Latin. Mm-hmm. So for him, it was a real struggle that made him not be able to complete his studies well. Everybody loved him, but he just couldn't get the work done. So he came home, met with his pastor, and went to see the bishop, and the bishop said, "What do you want to do?" And Father Stan didn't hesitate. He said, I really want to be a priest, bishop. Can you send me somewhere?" And they found him Mount St. Mary's Seminary, where he did finish, and lots of people still remember him there.
How did he end up in Guatemala?
In the 60s, there was a call from the Pope to send evangelizers and missionaries to all of Latin America. So many dioceses from throughout the U.S. and many religious communities began missionary work down there. And the Diocese of Oklahoma at the time was Oklahoma City and Tulsa together. They met up and went to establish a mission in the Diocese of Sololá, where Santiago Atitlan, the small town, is located. And he was not one of the original group because he had just become a priest when the mission started. Mm-hmm. But he was there for the 13 years. He went in 1968 until his death in 1981.
What did he do there? Was he just a parish priest, a pastor?
At the beginning, he was part of the missionary team, and the team had some religious, lay people, priests, and the mission was to help them both physically and spiritually to serve the community and the parish, which is all one and the same. The town all revolves, as you know, mm-hmm. Around that big church in the plaza, and it's the center and the heart of the place. I think for Father Stan, what was really beautiful is because of his very normal and simple background of being a farmer, he went out into those fields in Oklahoma, like he did in Oklahoma. He went out to those fields out there in the surrounding Santiago Atitlan, and he worked with the people, which meant working with the Mayan Indian community, the poorest of the poor down there. Mm-hmm. The name of their community in particular, there's the Zutu Hill Indians. And to this day, they still follow their traditional way of life. It's a very confined area and kind of in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. So he had to learn probably a little bit of Spanish, but also the native Mayan Indian languages of the common people there, correct?
I consider that one of the miracles of his service to the Lutu Hill. The fact that here's this guy who could not even complete Latin very well.
Yeah.
And he failed at it, and then he goes down there, and he not only becomes fluent in one language, but in both. And
sure.
The Lutu Hill language is no small task to be learned. That is a very difficult and specific dialect. It was a very difficult time. I think all of Central America was really on fire. Father Stan ended up being murdered a year after Archbishop Romero. So it's all happening at the same time,
mm-hmm,
right? It's not just Guatemala, but that whole region was in heavy unrest and very violent situation, mostly against the poor people. The thing with Father Stanley is that in addition to his pastoral duties and learning the language of the Mayan Indians there, he assisted in translating the New Testament into the Lutu Hill language. And he began in 1973. He started celebrating Mass in that language. And that in itself was considered a dissident act because he was siding, quote-unquote siding, with the poor people rather than with the government.
Talk about his martyrdom, if you would, please.
There was so much unrest in the area that when the violence began arriving in Santiago Atitlan, it was very difficult for him to see his people being murdered and taken and disappearing. You know, it's the famous, in Spanish you say, los desaparecidos. They were just taken and they were assumed dead after time. And it was all his parishioners. So for Father Stan to stand with them simply by servicing them and by collecting the dead when things happen and by feeding the widows and the orphans, you know, he was very much doing the works of mercy that we're praying and bringing into our lives in this year of mercy.
Mm-hmm.
He was living them. He was living them every day in how he ministered to them. When he was told that he was on a death list, he and his associate pastor, who was in Mayan Indian himself, left and came back to Oklahoma for a small period of time. He knew he needed to go back. And his famous line is, he wrote in a letter, the shepherd cannot run from his sheep. And he considered himself that shepherd that needed to be back there with his people. And he did go back in time to celebrate Holy Week and Easter with them, and then was martyred just a few months later on July 28th. He was in the rectory in the evening, and there, across the courtyard from the rectory, there were nuns that serviced the parish with him, and he had a friend there who was a nurse who was being a volunteer in the mission with him. And so he was very aware when they came for him that he did not want to have them go and take anybody else, that he was said to keep them there, and he's answering the door and letting them in and then being shot right there in the rectory. That's also an act of love, because he knew that they could have raided everybody else who was there.
Maria Ruiz Scaparlanda's book, The Shepherd Who Didn't Run, Father Stanley Rother, Martyr from Oklahoma, is available through its publisher, Our Sunday Visitor, at osb.com, as well as through Catholic and major booksellers. For Catholic Baltimore, I'm Bob Krebs.
Life can be hard, and at times we feel overwhelmed and alone. When faced with problems, know that there is a group of Catholics who are part of the prayer ministry of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, waiting to lift you and your needs to God in prayer. This ministry is comprised of men and women, young and old, religious and lay, from every ethnic and cultural background. They pray as individuals and in groups, in homes and meeting spaces throughout Baltimore. Like you, they are people who have suffered the same hurts, fears, pains, sickness, loss, and everyday burdens. Learn more about this ministry by visiting our website at www.archbalt.org. If you are in need of prayer, send your prayer request to prayers@archbalt.org or by phone to 410-547-5517. Would you like to volunteer to be a part of the ministry? Prayer ministers are always needed. Please call or email our coordinator, who would be happy to speak with you.
The season of sacraments is nearly here. First Holy Communion, Confirmation, and weddings. Visit the Baltimore Basilica, America's first cathedral, and stop by the gift shop for all of your gift needs. From beautiful frames to crucifixes and crosses, statues, and one-of-a-kind rosaries, the Basilica Gift Shop has it all. Friendly, knowledgeable staff members can help you select the perfect gift. Also available, Baltimore's very own Mouth Party Caramels, locally designed hand-painted signs and jewelry, plus gifts for Easter as well as an extensive line of St. Patrick's Day items sure to bring out the Irish in everyone. Visit the Basilica Gift Shop at 409 Cathedral Street in Baltimore, or call 410-727-3565 for hours and directions. Free street parking available directly in front of the Basilica between 9:30 and 4 p.m.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Baltimore. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May God bless us and keep us always in his love.